Abimelech. Saul then calls out Abimelech and all his family and says, surely you're going to die. But what did Saul's guards and soldiers do when he says, okay, kill all the priests of Jehovah? No, we're not going to do that. But he did find somebody who was going to do that, and he took care of that. He killed 85 of the priests and then all the household of Abimelech except for Abiathar, who was able to escape and find David. And all the family of Abimelech and Nob were also destroyed, the wives and children and all the other things that were of the household. Well, we see David, you know, has penned many psalms. And in between, we see that when he went to the cave, he was looking for some help. He was looking for deliverance. He felt he was powerless. Again, was he powerless when he fought Goliath? You know, all he had was a couple smooth stones and a sling, and he was able to take care of Goliath with one stone and defeated him with God's help. So feeling alone and powerless and without a place of refuge, he looks to God in prayer. And most of his psalms echo those sentiments that he finds deliverance in Jehovah from his enemies. And this is no different when we see Psalm 142. And then 52, he also writes a psalm that goes against the person who destroyed the family of Abimelech and their house because he had no fear of Jehovah. He wasn't afraid of him. He was looking for the reward and riches that Saul was going to grant him because I'm following what Saul wants me to do. I've taken care of those. Those are the enemies of Saul because they helped David. Yeah, they gave him some of the showbread and they gave him the sword that was already his. So yeah, you really helped him. But we're going to make sure that no good deed will go unpunished, according to Saul. And David in the high tower, the strongholds, he can have the confidence that God is with him. God will give him strength. He will show that he will take care of him and also judge those that are against him, his enemies. And as David also, remember, when he saw Goliath, he hurled denunciation. How be it from you, this Philistine, to stand against the armies of the living God. Today, this day, the Philistines and everyone else will know that there is a living God in Israel, and Jehovah is his name. And so he also hurls those insults to the Edomite that destroyed Abimelech. And then we see David then travels in Israel because being attacked. And David comes and saves them and protects them from being wiped out. And through Abiathar, he learns that Saul knows where he is. Word has gotten to Saul. He inquires of Abiathar through the ephod, through the decision that he can talk directly to Jehovah. Hey, will these city fathers turn me into Saul? And they will. I have to leave. But we see that Saul keeps saying that God has delivered David into my hands on this occasion or this occasion. But God is not talking to Saul anymore. He's no longer getting revelation where he can inquire of the Lord as to what he should do. And it's interesting that when Jonathan and David had parted last time, they don't know if that was going to be the last meeting that they had, but they wept in each other's arms. They had strong feelings of admiration and respect for each other, but they were able to find each other in the wilderness. You know, it's hard for us sometimes to meet up with family members when we're traveling. You know, we need cell phones and GPS things, but they were able to find each other in the wilderness and had a reunion. And you just think of that reunion, that embrace that they had seen each other. Luckily, Saul didn't follow Jonathan and didn't know that, and he went back to his house. But Saul doesn't matter. He has enough people around to say, hey, we know where David is. We know he's in the wilderness. We know where he is. We'll let you know where he's going, where he's camping at, where he's going to be. And Saul almost gets to David, but has to break off his pursuit because he's been told, hey, the Philistines are raiding the land. And being king, I guess he decided that he needed to then break off pursuit and take care of this business. Well, we now come to chapter 24. And we see David still on the run from Saul. And Saul is trying to pursue him in the cracks and crevices, the sheep holds, the steep paths where the goats would go. And we know that they're in the area that's just off the Dead Sea called the En Gedi. And this map doesn't really do it justice, but there's a lot of crevices and high little paths. And remember, the Dead Sea is the lowest point on the planet. I mean, they call it the Dead Sea for a reason. There is no fish that grows. You can't fish that sea. That's a Dead Sea. There's no fish in there. It's very salt. But if you did happen to go into the water, you would float very easily. If you couldn't float anywhere else, you can float there. And so we see the high hills coming off the plain, and that drops down into the Dead Sea. And so they have these crevices and caves and things. And we'll see in chapter 24, David, and actually 24, 25, and 26, David is going to be tested. He's given a series of abilities to where he now has the power to take life. He will have the ability to, with two different encounters with Saul and an encounter with Nabal that we'll see in chapter 25, that he can then carry out a personal grievance. This is mine enemy. I physically have the capability of doing away with Saul in two different occasions. But he doesn't do that. He keeps saying, why? Why does he show respect to Saul? Because he knows that Saul, even though he's wrong, even though he's pursuing them, he's still God's anointed. He's still the king of Israel. He's still showing respect to Saul, even though Saul wants to pursue him and wants to take his life. Another map, if you see the red circle, not the arrow, but the red circle, that's the area region where we're in right now as he went from the forest and Keilah, which is round number 10 up there, and he's moved toward the Dead Sea area to try and find places to hide, and he's in the wilderness. Well, Saul has taken 3,000 chosen men, 3,000 of his best warriors, and I guess they're, you know, capable of hunting and finding things and going through different caves. And Saul, it's interesting in these different versions. One version, American Standard, says Saul goes to cover his feet. Well, I guess that's an interesting term for he had to go use the restroom in a cave. And as he's bent down, as he's not noticing, David and all his men are out further in. And if you've ever been in a cave and you're further back in the cave and someone comes in the front, you see the light and you're like, oh, we can see who is coming in. They can't see us because we're in the dark. But we can see to the mouth of the cave. And David creeps up close to him and cuts off the corner of his robe. So he got close enough that he could have easily has taken his life, but does not. And then, even at that, when he's taken the corner of his robe, he feels bad. I caught the corner of his robe. I shouldn't have done that. You know, this is God's anointed. I should have, you know, this is the same guy. Remember, David, you were in his throne room playing the harp to soothe his mind, and he just happened to have a javelin in his hand, a spear, and not once but twice tried to pin you against the wall. But David also told his men, look, I know you think that Jehovah has given him into my hands to be killed, but we're not going to kill Saul. We know that the kingship will be removed from Saul. It's been told to him. Samuel told it to him. David knows about it because he's been in contact with Samuel, because Samuel anointed him and said, you are going to be a man after God's own heart, and you will have the kingship. When Saul left the cave, he didn't have no idea that David was behind him. Had no idea that he cut the little corner of his robe off. Had no idea. But David comes out of the cave, sees Saul, yells to him, bows down to King Saul, shows him respect and reverence that he's being God's anointed. And Saul says, who's that? Is that my son David? Yes. And so here's another good rugged area, if you can see the crevices and cracks and rugged area of this En Gedi where they're hiding and taking refuge in. And again, David asks him, Who are you listening to? Who tells you these things? Who's giving you counsel that I'm the one trying to harm you? Here, I had ability to take your life today. I had the power. You were given to me into my hands this day, but I didn't do it. You're listening to men that are telling you I want to harm you, and I'm not. David said, look, I have a piece of your robe just to prove it. And probably went and went, well, I guess he does. And David tells Saul, I'm not guilty of any wrongdoing. The only thing I've ever done for you is accomplish these things. You told me to go out and lead the armies against the Philistines, and I was successful. It started when he heard that song, right? Saul kills the thousands, and David kills the... I'm jealous of that. I think you're going to, you know, do away with me. David did nothing but try and help Israel and help Saul by completing all the tasks that was given to him. And David says, you know, have God judge between us. What's my wrongdoing? What has my hand done? Why are you pursuing me that I'm nothing? You know, look at me. I was all alone. I'm to you like a dead dog or a flea. You have the entire army at your disposal from the nation of Israel. Judge me between us. Today, Jehovah has delivered you into my hands. Well, what does Saul have to tell him? Well, I guess you're right. You could have killed me this day. And Saul says, you are more righteous than I am. Okay. David showed him goodness, and Saul just wanted to do what? Kill him. He just wanted to take his life. Saul affirms that David will be king. So finally, Saul, it's coming out of your own mouth that, yes, David will be king. And Saul says, don't cut off my family. Well, what do we know about Jonathan David already? We already know that they had a covenant about that. They've already established that, hey, Jonathan, make sure when you become king that you don't cut off my family, Jonathan says. And David swore to that, of course. And, you know, as we move further along in the story, we'll find that David, you know, goes again to seek out, you know, the remnants of Saul's family and take care of them. So that was nothing for David to already make an oath. He's already made it to Jonathan, the same thing. I'll protect your family. I will make sure that, you know, that you're not destroyed or taken away. And David gives his oath in the last part of chapter 24. Swear now, therefore, unto me by Jehovah, that thou wilt not cut off my seed after me, and thou shalt wilt not destroy my name out of my father's house. Well, it's the same thing he talked to Jonathan just a little bit ago when they were parting, and then again reaffirmed in the wilderness that they confirmed that oath. And David swore unto Saul, and Saul went home. So he returned back to his home. And you think, okay, that's it, right? Saul's no longer going to pursue David. And David and his men got them up into a stronghold. Well, we see that's very sparkly, Violet. Sorry, I got distracted. Yes, it was sparkly. And so we see that Saul went back to his home. He even acknowledged that David was going to be king and acknowledged that David had shown him good. And so we would think, okay, that should be the end of Saul's pursuit for David. But we'll find out that that's not so. And again, like putting the Psalms in correct order, we see that when David had fled from Saul in the cave, that he had penned this Psalm 57, where he asked for, again, deliverance when threatened by fierce armies. So if we go ahead and turn to Psalm 57, I'll have some of you read some of those passages with us. And I really enjoy adding in these Psalms. Like the first time, I think we talked about them. I don't think we really got into the Psalms because we did that separately. A prayer for deliverance when threatened by your enemies. A contrast now of night as being the terror and the morning being as salvation. It has two parts, and if you really look at this And I've read it a couple times, and you see the strength, or you see that energy building in the last half of that psalm in verses 6 through 11. And so hopefully you feel that too as we read through that. And I'll ask Steph to read the first two verses for me. I'm looking for refuge. I'm looking to cry and be protected by your wings. And you know, Jesus made that reference too, that, hey, if you would just come to me as a mother covers her chicks with her wings, just come unto me to be protected. I cry out to the God Most High who fulfills his purpose for me. And Joe, do you mind reading the next two verses, 3 and 4? Yes, sir.
He shall send from heaven and save me from the reproach of him that can swallow me up. God has sent his mercy and his truth. My soul is among lions, and I lie even among them that are set on fire. Even the sons of men, whose teeth are spears and arrows, and their tongue as a sharp sword.
He will send from heaven. He will save me. I am hotly pursued. He sends his love and his faithfulness to me. And then David feels he's in the midst of all these different beasts and lions and swords and spears and tongues, and no one is behind me. But he knows God is. God is behind him. Jerry, do you mind reading verse 5 for me?
Exalted, O God, above the heavens, let your glory be above all the earth.
No, just 5. That's fine. That's good. No. I was just grabbing my thoughts. So his prayer petition of Jehovah. Jehovah is not going to let David be succumbed to his enemies, because it's God's plan that he rise up and be king of Israel. But every time David feels that he's boxed in, that there's no one going to be with him, his prayer shows, I know where to put my strength. I know where to put my focus. Are we making that example that David has? Where to put our focus? Put our focus squarely on his shoulders, because if God is for us, the numbers can be against us. The people can be against us. But it's shown time and again in the nation of Israel, the numbers doesn't matter. The amount of evil against you doesn't matter. If you have God with you, you have that direction. Chuck, I'm going to have you read verse 6 and 7, if you might.
They prepared a net for my steps. I was despondent. They dug a pit ahead of me, but they fell into it. Selah. My heart is confident, God. My heart is confident. I will sing. I will sing praises.
And you think about, okay, they have this net being cast in front of me, and my soul is bowed down. I have showed reverence to God. And my heart is filled. You know, when we get joy and we fill our hearts with joy, we want to sing. We want to sing out. We want to sing praises. Yea, I will sing. Yea, I will sing praises. Can you feel that welling up of his heart, knowing that his prayers are going to be answered? Because remember, just a few psalms ago, he said that God hears my prayers. God hears me. When he asks and inquires of Abathar, Abathar is able to respond by what God has given him to do and what direction he has for them. Ronnie, if you could read 8 and 9 and 10 for me.
Awake, my glory. Awake, lute and harp. I will awaken the dawn. I will praise thee, O Lord, among the people. I will sing to thee among the nations, for thy mercy reaches under the heavens, and thy truth under the clouds.
So we see the dawn of a new day, a dawn breaking, that fullness that I praise you, God. I see that you're behind me. I'm not going to let it know that it's just me that knows about it, to just my people that are around me know about it. I'm going to make sure everyone, the nations know. I will sing of you among the peoples, for your love is great. And how does it reach to the... And it has faithfulness that reaches to the skies. We see in verse 11, the last verse of this psalm, be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. We see as it's went from verse 6 to 11, you can see that crescendo, you can see that building up, that confidence that he knows that he'll be delivered. David will be delivered from his enemies. He knows he transitions from the prayer of asking for protection to the prayer and supplication to reassurance, a building of trust. Time and again, he sees it overwhelming. You know, from the time of his darkest days where I'm all alone in a cave, there's no one with me. And then I get some followers. But even then, I have a bigger number that's after me, and that bigger number can't find me. And then when they do find me, I've been given him in my hands. I've given Saul in my hands that I could take his life. So he knows God does answer prayers. We know God answers prayers. And so he then has that welling up within his heart of thanksgiving, of song and praise. And I want to sing out so that everyone can hear. Did you feel it? Did you feel that intensity building up? Could you feel that indwelling? I know I did when I read it a couple times and started really digesting it, letting it fill yourself. You know, as Colossians 3:16, let that word of the Lord dwell in you richly. Let it fill you up. Well, as we transition from the psalm, we go back to our chapters, and we start with Chapter 25, 1 Samuel, and we see on a sad note that Samuel has now passed away. 1 Samuel 25, verse 1, Samuel dies. The passing of a guard, we know that's the passing in the transitions, because he was the transition from the period of Judges to the United Kingdom. He was the one who anointed the first two kings of Israel, Saul, and then David. He was the one that went to God and said, hey, they no longer trust me. They no longer are following me. They're rejecting me. And God says, no, I'm their king. They're rejecting me, not you, Samuel. I still have work for you to do. And so he's able to go and, in a ripe age, do all these things. He saw the beginning of David being anointed and the beginning of David. But he never got to see David on the throne. He never got to see him ascend. But David no longer has his chief, you know, guidance, you know, mentor, protector. You know, he's not all alone. David knows he has Jehovah, but he no longer has Samuel there. And the nation mourns, right? It says the nation mourns in verse 1, right? And Samuel died, and all Israel gathered themselves together and lamented and buried him in his house at Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. When we have a president who passes away, we have a big funeral procession. The whole nation gets tuned in. Anytime we have a death of someone prominent, well, Samuel was someone prominent in the nation of Israel. And all of Israel knew his importance. And they all wept as he passed. Israel still has problems. They still have battles all around them from the Israelites. They still have Saul who's trying to take David's life. That they're not sure why there's a conflict there, but they see that Samuel is no longer there to be their judge. And we see David then leave from En-Gedi and move into the center portion there of Judah between Carmel and Maon. We saw as where Samuel left Saul and went to his hometown of Ramah, and we don't see any more interaction between Samuel and Saul until Samuel comes back as a spirit and talks to him. Now we have a switch in the story. We get away from Saul pursuing David, but we see David now moving into the area of Carmel. Now, not Mount Carmel, which is on the coast, but Carmel, a city. And he meets a man who's very wealthy, who has lots of sheep and lots of goats and lots of possessions. It's in the time of the shearing where it should be, you know, we're gathering all the sheep and we're going to have a festival, we're going to have a feast, and we're going to have plenty. And he obviously has plenty to provide for. But those are treacherous areas. You know, the Philistines have been raiding all different kinds of cities and stuff. And David has 600 men, all fighting men, around him. And he finds that his shepherds are out by the sheep. And he says, well, hey, we'll just put our men around you so, you know, you don't lose any. You don't get any lions or tigers or bears. I don't think it was tigers, but I know he said lions and bears when he talked to Saul about when David was a shepherd. And David was a shepherd. He knew what the hazards were, so he knew that there would be hazards to a large group, that maybe one or two sheep would get taken in the night by, you know, wild animals. And he placed his men around them, and he interacted with the shepherd. And when David had heard that they were shearing and going back for the feast, he says, well, hey, I'm going to send a couple men to this fellow and tell him, hey, greet him with respect. Show him that we were humble. We were treating your men with respect, and we looked after the shepherds, and we looked after your flocks and make sure that they were protected. And notice nothing was gone. Nothing was missing. No goats were missing. No sheep were missing. No harm befell your men. And we make sure that they were provided for. All we ask is a small portion of the festival. You know, we don't want to come to your house, but we want to share in some of the extra that you have, the harvest, the food for my men who took the time to protect your belongings. And you think that would be a reasonable request. This man was well off. It wasn't like, hey, you're taking food from my table. You know, I'm not being able to, you know, provide for my family because you're eating all my food, David. And what does this man ask of David? Who are you? Who's David? Who's Jesse? Have you not been around? Have you not heard the songs? Saul killed the thousands. David killed the 10,000. Did you know about this guy, the Goliath, and the battles of the Philistines, and this guy was a giant, and David, as a young man, killed him? Well, he didn't seem to mind David. He didn't seem to have any respect for him. He said, well, hey, we're just going to, you know, that's okay. No, we're not going to do any of that. We're not going to send you back with any food. We're not going to provide for you. And why should I? What have you done for me? Oh, to protect my men and my shepherds and my flock, but that doesn't deserve anything. How did David react to that news? How did you know he was upset? What did he tell his men? Right. Today's like, hey, pack up, load up your weapons, put on your swords. How many did he take? 400, right? He only had 6, so he left 200 with his, you stay with the stuff, we're taking 400, right? Now, don't know how many Nabal had as far as servants go, but they were shepherds and servants and stuff. They were not an army. David had a small army of 400. Now, David was ready. What was he prepared to do? Kill every male in the household. I'm going to take everybody's life. You know, this is how you treated me. I gave you goodness and kindness, and this is how you treated us for sparing all the things that were belonging to you. But who heard that Nabal was not very friendly to David? Abigail. Who's Abigail? His wife. And what does it say about her? She was attractive, but she also was, she had good sense, right? She had good sense and good understanding. And she said, this is not going to go well. All right, this is what we're going to do. I'm not going to tell my husband, but this is what we're going to do, right? Because I know something's about to happen, you know? It's two lions. Somebody's got to take out one lion. And I think my money's on David. She didn't know that, but she was like, well, okay. This is what I'm going to do. So she prepares some food. A lot of food, right? When you start looking at the numbers, well, yeah, I guess I would probably feed 600 men, you know? She sends her servants on ahead and says, okay, tell them I'm on the way. Tell David that we're bringing stuff to him, right? And David says, he kept all that this fellow had in the wilderness safe. I did everything. I protected his property. I protected his stuff. But Abigail sees David. When she sees him, she's riding on a donkey. And when she sees David, she shows respect, right? She shows respect to David. She falls at his feet and asks for all this wickedness, this evil that her husband did, to be fallen on her. Transfer it to me. Because here's his name. This is what it really means. He's a fool, and his folly is with him. That's your husband you're talking about. Yeah, I know. Well, he's about to wipe out everything that we built because of his arrogance and not treating David very nicely. So did David receive her gesture well? Yes. Abigail asked for forgiveness and mercy. David was set, right? He was, in his mind, he was already, the deed was done. I'm going to come in and I'm going to take out and wipe out everybody. But she prevented him from taking personal vengeance against a wicked man. Now, David had every right, he felt, to take that man's life. He felt he certainly had the power to do that. God had given him the power because he had all those men who were following him. But Abigail did what to David? She kept him from committing this act. David had shown that by Abigail how the killing of Nabal would have been just a worthless burden. What does David say to Saul when Saul was pursuing him? Am I a dead dog that you're pursuing, or a flea? Well, it's the same thing can be said here. David, what are you doing to this man? He can't fight against you. He doesn't have the ability. You've been a warrior since your youth. You know, you have God behind you. David sees that she spoke wisely, that she acted wisely, because he was determined. He was going to do this. Before the morning came, before the sun rose, he was going to take her life, the life of the family. Excuse me, not just Abigail, but the life of the family, all the men in the household. Yes.
And David rewarded that. He recognized his rashness, because he says in a rash way, let it come upon me if I don't kill you before morning. So, I mean, that's a rash statement. And he was called to pause. His anger was getting the best of him. So keep that dynamic in mind, because it's going to be another aspect when David will go and spend time with the Philistines. It's not necessarily God's direction, because we saw earlier he said plainly, you go back to Judah from the wilderness. And you, an implication, you stay in Judah, despite the fact that there's a lot of challenges. So we see a man of faith that has his challenges and problems with that, and God is allowing him to navigate that and for us to learn from that as well.
I think that's a really good point. And remember, David's just a man. So he felt slighted. He felt like another man slighted him. So again, you're right. He's also an Israelite. He's also from the tribe of Judah area. At least he's living there. And there was nothing in the law that gave him the right to kill this man, because he didn't kill any of his family. He didn't bring the sword against him. He just refused his offer of kindness that David had given him. So David, like you said, I'm angry, and I'm acting rashly. Something we can do today, right? Act rashly. And Abigail came and humbled herself and gave David to reflect And we'll see that story too when Nathan comes to him and tells him what rash act he did, that David was able to at least go back and go, you're right. You acted more nobly than I did, and I need to take pause. And she actually spared him from making this rash action. And he then tells Abigail, you know, well, we're going to accept your food and hospitality, and you go home to your house in peace. This was going to be a burden for him, yes.
But it did not change David's actions being the same as well.
And as we see with these verses, well, Jehovah was going to punish Nabal for his action, but without David having to commit this act of murder, basically, is what he was about to commit. And Abigail was then told to go back home in peace. And so when she returns from David, she finds the household is partying. This is a festival time. Obviously, her husband has freely imbibed in wine, and she said he was drunk. And so she opted not to speak to a drunk and give him any, which is kind of good advice, too. That means I can't really rationalize or have a good conversation with someone who's intoxicated. I have seen that many times in my job of trying to rationalize or talk logic with people who are intoxicated, and that's a one-way battle. You'll never win. So she chose the right thing. So she waited till the morning, and it says that Nabal was free of the wine or impairments of the wine and was able to understand what she was telling him. And she told him what David was planning to do. And we don't know the actual malady that turned him to stone. You know, we think of things today. Well, what would cause someone to, you know, no longer, you know, be able to move or talk or speak? We think of a stroke, you know, a stroke or even something like a heart attack or a seizure to where they're no longer can talk to us. But it says 10 days later that he passes away. And so we see that Jehovah's retribution on Nabal wasn't just fleeting. This was immediate. And then David hears, and he knows that this young woman, Abigail, Nabal's wife, treated him correctly. Yes. I know he's going to ring the bell, too. We got like a minute.
Sliding God's anointed. Just as David wouldn't do that against God's anointed Saul, David was God's anointed. And this was a very egregious sin that Nabal committed. It wasn't just sliding some man. It was God's anointed.
Right.
So the punishment fit the crime.
Right, and it was immediate. It was immediate. Okay, well, 40 minutes went by that fast. I know, he did give me an extra couple minutes, right? He did. All right, I appreciate that. David, Chuck, are you teaching the class next Wednesday? Okay, so Chuck will be teaching next Wednesday because I'll be out of town. So we look forward to that. Thank you for all your attention. I appreciate it.